Some of the 70s, particularly theme songs, were some of the, and some of the 80s, were some of the greatest ever made. 641 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Martha Saunders giving her State of the University address here on News Radio. It was canceled because of the hurricane, I think Helene, if I remember correctly. So she'll be doing that at 9:30 this morning, and you can listen to that right here on News Radio on Pep Talk. Right now we have Bruce Woody. He is the executive director of the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority. Bruce, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So my understanding is that yesterday, not a lot of major things happened. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Well, the first part of the fiscal year, which started October 1 for us, is usually fills the docket full of renewing contracts and thing purchases for the year. So that was the fairly routine business that was predominant in yesterday's agenda.
Absolutely essential, but not particularly interesting, which is, you know, a lot of government falls into that category, right? I did want to ask you just this had been posed to me as a question, and I was curious about it. I had heard that there was kind of a move, like there had been a move towards natural gas for your vehicles, and that now there was maybe a move away from that, even to the point where the like the filling station in Ellison Field was maybe going to go away. Can you... I assume that's true, but if it's not true, tell me, and maybe why?
Sure. There's two compressed natural gas, or CNG, stations in our community. One of them is on Pine Forest, just north of Mobile Highway. Another one is in the Ellison Industrial Complex. Both those are located pretty much to serve the ECUA. We have a large fleet of CNG vehicles in our sanitation division. When we were serving Santa Rosa County, we had all of our Santa Rosa fleet over at the Ellison location. We are not contracting with them for collection of trash, so we no longer have a large contingent of vehicles over there. And the Pensacola Gas Energy, who originally helped us build that station, gets very, very little other outside customers near that location. So it's costing much more a year to run and operate and maintain than we get out of actual sales.
So, okay, that makes sense. Also, because the city does, like, its collection, you guys in the county, that makes sense to me, too, just thinking about it geographically. But are we moving away from diesel and, or are we moving away from CNG and back to diesel now as just, like, the basis of the fleet?
Well, 20 years ago, CNG was clearly the favor. CNG produced about 20% less greenhouse gas emissions, and that was the main concern at the time. We were willing to make the investment in those vehicles, even though they cost more, because of that goal more than anything else. There was also some savings in fuel a long time to offset the cost of the higher cost of vehicles. That has changed over time. There's been about four major upgrades to diesel technology in the time since then. And now the latest version of diesel engines actually are competitive with CNG vehicles in terms of their actual gas emissions. So we are making some purchases in some of our smaller vehicles right now in diesel and trying to track life cycle costs. You know, the cost of a vehicle is how much you pay for it up front. And right now, a CNG large trash collection vehicle is about $489,000. We can buy them anywhere from $80,000 to $100,000 less if they're diesel up front. Then over the course of their life, they're much, much more expensive. CNG is much more expensive to maintain. They have a cycle of preventive maintenance activities that are quite expensive because there's not many of them out there, and so the equipment is more expensive. And then at the end of life, there's a really good salvage value on even an old, kind of worn-out trash truck if it's diesel. But if it's CNG, they won't pay much more than scrap metal prices.
Wow. Okay. Oh, interesting. So All right. That's what I was curious about. I'd heard that, and that makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm just kind of curious if that was true for UCUA. We're talking to Bruce Woody, the executive director. Go ahead.
Just clarification. We haven't made a full changeover. We're doing that on our smaller vehicles to kind of monitor and track those costs. We currently have 19 vehicles that are still going to be CNG that are purchased brand new. They're coming in over the course of the next year.
Oh, so we're still kind of invested in that pathway, even though maybe if we were starting from scratch today and had that opportunity, we wouldn't go down.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all right. I get that too, especially with supply chain issues we've had over the last several years. Last time that we had you on, Bruce Woody, the executive director for ECUA, we were talking about the PIPE program that's been basically mandated by the federal government. This is to figure out which pipes, may or may not have had any kind of lead in them. And so you've created this whole map. There's, as I understand it, and always feel free to correct me if I get something wrong on this, because it's certainly not my area of expertise. But the short of it is, as I understand, that you have pipes that are too new to have had any lead in them, basically after 1980. So you know those aren't going to have lead. They might be galvanized steel, but they're not going to be lead. And so you guys you're in the very laborious process of identifying pipes that you know don't have lead by having eyeballed them, pipes that cannot have lead because they were made after 1980, but there's a lot of those, and then pipes that, are unknown but are old enough and, they may. And as I understand it, we're talking like maybe 20,000 are old enough, kind of concerned about, maybe 60,000 are in the unknown but new enough category, and those are the ones I want to ask about. So am I roughly on track? Am I close to being right so far?
That was a very, very good summary. One exception, the last time we talked, those numbers were accurate. Our inventory has continued to evolve since the last time.
Okay.
You and I had a conversation. We are now down to less than 9% of our inventory. There's only 8,000 homes that we haven't confirmed whether they are non-lead.
Okay, so the 19 has become 8. Okay, great.
Yep. Yeah,
so and then I know, and then the roughly 60 or so thousand is the ones that you haven't put eyeballs on, but they were made after the 80s, so they were not lead in any case, right?
Overall, the only ones we have in the non-lead category are just those 8,000 out of 102,000 customers.
But what I mean is the ones that might be galvanized, or the ones that likely are, that have galvanized, that's the one that I'm asking about now. Those are still, that's still like tens of thousands of those, right?
There is a lot of galvanized in our system.
Okay.
But the galvanized is not a concern unless there was any past possibility that there might have been lead ahead of the galvanized line. That's a category called galvanized requiring replacement. You know how the federal government likes to have all kinds of tricky
categories,
definitions and categories. So far, we don't have anything in that category.
Well, so the 10-year replacement of the galvanized that the EPA is talking about, that doesn't apply to us? We don't have any lows?
That would only apply if there was lead pipe ahead of it.
Okay.
Give you an example. If a service line to a home was galvanized, but the utility company's lead pipe providing transmission to that galvanized line had lead in it, then the galvanized line would need to be replaced as well as the,
gotcha. Okay.
The other. But if our system is non-lead and there's no lead ahead of that galvanized system, that is a requirement that the galvanized system be replaced.
Well, the one thing,
by the way, we have no history whatsoever of any of our transmission or distribution lines having lead in them whatsoever in this utility.
Right, and that's great here, and that's something that you'd said before, so I appreciate that. But the one thing that, again, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, because this is definitely not my area of expertise, but it was my understanding that although the galvanized may not need to be replaced, and it's not a concern if it doesn't have the lead in front of it, like you're saying, it was my understanding that if they flush the main, if they have to shut down the connection that goes into a galvanized, that there's like a requirement for filtration or something, that those pipes, the customers have to use filters if that's the case, and like the Brita filters or something. Is that true?
That would be only the case in that remaining 8,000 that we haven't absolutely confirmed as being non-lead.
Oh, okay. So
until the inventory is entirely complete, that remaining 8,000 out of our total 102,000 folks will be getting a letter from us letting them know that while the inventory is ongoing, their particular address has not been confirmed as non-lead yet. And if we do any work on that line, that's considered if we open a valve, if we replace a meter or something like that, then it's advised that they go through a flushing process only because it hasn't been verified to be non-lead yet.
Okay, so but that does that. So that applies to the 8,000. That does not apply, or would apply to the 8,000. But that does not apply to the other 59 or 60,000 post 1980, possibly galvanized. If you have to shut off the main, those are fine. You don't have to filter that water.
Right, right. I'd like to clarify. You're quoting the 89 number because we talked about how lead was essentially outlawed by sort of the EPA in 1989.
Right.
Locally here, our prior leaders were pretty astute about that being a concern and an issue. Pensacola's building and plumbing code has outlawed lead since 1964. The county had similar ordinance since 1949, so it goes back quite a ways. The majority of the
even in the copper sweat and stuff that's even there, that's not an issue.
I'm talking about actual lead pipe. No, there has been an issue, an ongoing issue for more years about having solder, lead in solder for copper pipes. That's true.
But that'd be inside homes, right?
That's right.
Okay.
It's important to know that lead and copper concerns in drinking water really originates from household plumbing, not from the water supply itself. We try to protect all of our lines, including household plumbing, even though certainly we don't own or maintain that. But we try to make protections for that by minimizing the potential corrosion by making sure that the water chemistry is right. We adjust the pH, and we also add some chemicals that help coat the inside of the pipeline to prevent corrosion.
Is that the, I'm sure I'm going to say it wrong, hydrofluosilicic acid or something like that? Is that the additive?
No. Orthophosphate is what does the corrosion.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. So, hey, and before we go, that's what I want to talk about. I know that was kind of the big thing that you guys have been working on a lot, and it's good progress from the 19,000 down to the 8,000 unknowns. If people have questions about that or they want to see the map, where do they go?
I first encourage them to go to our website. On the front page, you can see a link to our line verification page. We've got all kinds of information about program overview, frequently asked questions. There's a little video that talks a little bit about the program. And about halfway down the page, there's the map that you and I have been discussing where somebody can actually put their actual address in and zoom in and find out for sure just what our inventory says about your specific address. And whether we verified it as of yet or not. And then there's a whole section on frequently asked questions that's full of information.
Perfect.
We also have a place where you can email us at mywaterservice@ecua.fl.gov. That link is on that page. And lots of ways to contact us.
Very good. Well, Bruce, I know it's a very complicated topic, and I know when people start thinking about water supply and stuff, it's easy to get scared because there's a lot of information out there. That's why I wanted to talk with you about it and, you know, find out what ECUA is doing. And I always appreciate the information. And, you know, I can't say this enough. I am glad that we have trash collection. I'm glad that we have recycling. I'm glad that we have, you know, wood collection. And I'm glad that we have clean drinking water and that you take the sewage away, because God forbid what would happen if we didn't have that service. So I appreciate the work that your folks do, you know, basically making our lives possible with modern infrastructure. Bruce Woody, the executive director from ECUA. Bruce, as always, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you again next month.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity, Andrew.